Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy fall, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a full-service website devoted to caregivers of the elderly. Thank you for tuning in today into an exciting half hour on generational coaching for caregivers. Before I introduce you to our very distinguished guest, I'd like to remind everyone that you can listen to any of our past radio shows on www.ecarediary.com under blogs under the Blog Talk Radio tab. We've had an incredibly diverse range of medical, healthcare, and elder care experts covering topics from caregiver stress to healthcare reform to end-of-life decision-making. So now I'm delighted to introduce Barbara Friesner. She founded the company AgeWise Living, www.agewiseliving.com, which is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this year. Barbara is a generational coach and the creator of the Ultimate Caregiver Success System. She is an expert on issues affecting the elderly and their families. Barbara started AgeWise Living as a result of over 25 years as the caregiver for her grandmother and then for over 17 years for her mother who had severe and advanced dementia. As a generational coach, Barbara helps her clients determine the best long-term solutions to their elder care issues, and then she helps her clients communicate with their aging loved ones so that they will willingly do what's in their best interest so that ultimately they can make and implement elder care decisions out of choice rather than crisis. What a concept. Barbara, welcome to our show today.
Thank you, Susan. I'm delighted to be here.
It's really a pleasure to have you. I'm so interested in learning about generational coaching and the idea of choice versus crisis. Please, before we go into that, please tell us about your background and what inspired you to focus your efforts on issues affecting the elderly and their families.
Well, I think, like most people in the elder care profession, I was in corporate America until my own personal and deeply emotional experiences focused me on elder care. And as you said, I had taken care of my grandmother for many years, and that was relatively easy, and, you know, relatively being a relative word, but because my grandmother and I were so close, we were just devoted to each other. But with my mother, like many mothers and daughters, we just weren't that close. And so I really had to figure out how to work with her in a way that would be a lot easier than what it was when I first started, because it was, in some cases, it was like oil and water. And I knew it was going to be, I started helping her after my father died, and she was okay, except that there was obviously dementia. And I knew that this was going to be a long journey. I had no idea it would be 17 years, but I knew it was going to be a long journey. And for my sanity as well as for hers, I knew I had to figure out how to do it in a way that was going to allow us to work together, and so that there wouldn't be the constant, you know, explosions and then making up and then explosions and making up, et cetera. So anyway, so that's what inspired me to sort of look into the issues of how to talk with my mother. And what I just sort of stumbled on was the realization that it's really a lot of the problems that she and I were having were generational issues. She looked at things very differently from the way I did. And in fact, baby boomers and their aging parents are generational opposites. And it was just amazing, because once I figured out how important the generational aspects of it were, suddenly it all just sort of fell into place. It doesn't mean that it was all, you know, roses and rainbows, but it was suddenly I was able to communicate with her in a way that kept things calm and could help her to understand me and help me to understand her. And then friends started to call when they saw the success I was having. They started to call, and then friends of friends, and then total strangers. And as you said, about 10 years ago, I started AgeWise Living, and that's been the focus ever since.
Well, I have to tell you, Barbara, I've been through your materials, and I completely understand what you're saying about the importance of understanding our parents' generation. And I'm so excited that you're on the show today to discuss the way you call yourself a generational coach. And I'd love for you to explain to the audience, where this term comes from and what does it mean. And it's so critical, as I've now learned through going through your materials.
Well, I'm a coach. I work with the family members, only the family members, never the senior. And I work with the family members, and all the work that I do is by phone. So ideally, I work with all the family members, all the siblings, and they can be spread out all over the country, and we work in conference calls, and we all work together. And I coach them on how to help their parents, primarily, and I think most importantly, on how to communicate with their aging parents. But as I said before, the generational aspect of it is just huge and so critical, because really so many of the issues that we are dealing with when we baby boomers are trying to help our parents really come from, very different generational perspectives, that just is the key to helping them. And so I'm a coach, and primarily what I coach the families on is the generational differences and how to communicate well to a very different generation. And so it just sort of made sense to call myself a generational coach.
Does. It makes absolute sense. And now, in your book, you wrote The Ultimate Caregiver Success Guide, and you ask, who is your aging loved one? And I found this really very curious before I read the chapter. You discuss two main generations that our elders belong to, what you call the Vicky D's and the Silent Generation, and I was just completely fascinated by the information about these two generations. Can you please tell us about these, and what are some of the key attitudes of each?
Yeah, I'd love to, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. The Vicky D's Vicky D's are Victorian Depression-era generation. So often when people think about their parents or the elderly, they think in terms of the Great Depression, and obviously the Great Depression had a huge effect on them. I mean, it was devastating to everyone. But the reality is that our parents were born long before the Great Depression. Thinking in terms of the Vicky D's, they were born really around 1905 to 1925. So they were born a long time before the Great Depression. And so although the Great Depression is important, and that's the D part, the Vicky part is that they were born at the end of the Victorian era. And that's really the key to a lot of the things that we struggle with today. Very private. You know, when you think about Victorian generation, you think about very prim and proper, very private. They didn't talk about personal things. They certainly didn't talk about health. They certainly didn't talk about money. Very proud, very self-sufficient. I can do it. I can do it myself. And it was a generation of very strictly defined male-female roles. The woman was the caregiver, took care of not only the children, but also the parents and the aunts and the uncles and everyone, and took care of the home. And the husbands were the breadwinners, and they took care of the finances. And then, yes, when the Great Depression hit, it was huge. And even though the Vicky D's were out of their formative years by that point, it was so horrible that it had a very huge impact on them. So we can't forget that part. So, of course, the Great Depression and they're, thinking about money and not wasting it and, all that aspect of it.
Right.
So when we think about the Vicky D's, that's the Vicky D's. The Silent Generation is a generation that most people don't know about. They were actually born between 1925 and 1945. And this is the one that actually was born around during the Great Depression. They were born and growing up during World War II. They were, all of these kinds of things were going on. So in addition to having all the aspects of the Vicky D's, private, proud, all of the rest of it, they also, because so much was going on that everybody was suffering with, these kids had to suffer in silence because they really couldn't complain because everyone was going through it. And so it was called the silent generation.
That's amazing. I have to tell you, I cannot believe when I was reading the silent generation, I actually got very emotional because I felt like I was reading about my mother. And in fact, she was born in 1942, and mm-hmm. she is so prototypical of the silent generation. I just could not believe how accurate it was. You know, she endured two wars in Korea, so she didn't go through the American experience, but I think the whole world was essentially going through this period of wartime, and everyone was involved. All, you know, most countries in the world were impacted in some ways.
And the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And the Great Depression.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Everybody. Right. So, and the Vicky D's, of course, it was as if you were talking about my father-in-law, who my husband and I took care of until he passed away in 2007, and that was also very difficult. He was very silent and very private about certain things, and, you know, I'd love for you to tell us, how did those experiences shape people from these generations and affect their choices now? I mean, I know, but I'd love for you to share this with our audience now.
Yeah, and it really is amazing when you think about it. I mean, not everyone is going to be every aspect, but it really is pretty amazing. Some of the things that affect them now, for example, when I said that the Vicky D's in silence were very private, they don't talk about personal things like health and money. They didn't talk to their kids about it. A lot of times they didn't talk to professionals about it. They didn't talk to the doctor. You know, you use like code words for pregnant, that sort of thing. The problem is now, when the children are trying to talk to mom and dad about their health issues, and did you go to the doctor, and what did the doctor say, the parents aren't going to talk about it because they are very private. This is not the sort of thing you talk about. Or mom goes to the doctor and you say, now be sure to ask him about, you know, X. And then you call mom that evening and you say, well, did you ask the doctor about it? Well, no, we didn't talk about it. And you're like, mom, that was the whole reason you went to the doctor. Well, mom didn't bring it up because it was just very private. You know, same thing about money. You just don't talk about money. So when the kids want to talk about money, well, how are you doing? How are you doing financially? They don't want to talk about it. And of course, you know, you can sort of understand that. If the last time the kids talked to their parents about money was when they borrowed money in college and didn't return it, you know, you can sort of appreciate why they don't want to talk to you about the money now. But anyway, it's also a group that's very proud. So they don't ask for help, and often they're not very gracious about accepting it. So you say, I just want to help. You know, what are you giving me a hard time about? I'm just trying to help you. And they don't want to talk about it because it's a very proud, very self-sufficient generation. But
yeah.
Probably the most important one is both of these generations, because the woman was the caregiver, then and the mother, you know, the caregiver for both the parents and the children, they expect their daughters and their daughters-in-law to be the caregiver. They expect it. They don't ask because why should I ask you? I expect you to do it.
Right.
And they would never think to ask the son to do it. And then they turn to the son for financial things. Even if the daughter's the, you know, the chief financial officer of a Fortune 500 company, they turn to the son, regardless of his experience. So it makes those kinds of things very difficult, and it affects their choices now because we're so different. As I said, we're opposites. And so you start looking at these things, and it can cause all kinds of friction. And by the way, expecting their daughters to take care of it and turn to their son for financial advice can also create sibling issues.
Sure,
so,
sure. And
yeah.
I have to tell you, Barbara, this is it's so helpful to understand these generational differences because it really sheds light on so much that you know, I mean, in my situation, I find frustrating sometimes, but when I listened to your audio about that, it was just so eye-opening, and I want to thank you for that. Now, let's move on to our next question, which is, what tips can you give adult children so that they can better empathize and relate to their parents and minimize conflict? I mean, all of us, I think, at the end of the day, don't want to argue with our parents. So what do you suggest to us?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand the generational difference, understand where they're coming from generationally, understand where they're coming from emotionally. This is a tough emotional time. But in addition, and really important, is to start talking and to start talking now. And so often people say to me, when is the right time to talk to my parents about, you know, to start talking to my mother about difficult things? And I say, start talking now about the easy things. And then as the opportunities arise, you can talk about the difficult things. Don't wait until one of you is 40 and the other is 60 or 60 and 80, but start talking now. And I think that is the biggest and most important way to minimize the conflict, is to open the lines of communication. And you know, the right opportunity to talk is every opportunity you get. And I'm not saying to talk about elder care issues every opportunity you get, but rather the kind of talk that open lines of communications. And too often the conversations between parents and their adult children is, you know, the child calls the parent, and how are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. And then we talk about the weather and, you know, okay, talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye. And you think, well, I talk to my mother every day. That's not talking. So if you need to really open the lines of communication, one of the hardest things to do, and one of the ways to do that, but often one of the hardest ways to do that, but really worth it, is to talk about what's going on in your own life. You know, we want mom to talk or dad to talk about their life, but we really don't want to share what's going on with ours because there's all kinds of reasons. But really to talk a little bit, oh, work was really difficult, this is what's going on, you know, and really to find things to talk about.
And this is why I find your material so valuable, is that you actually help us, because that was one of my first questions. Okay, so if I need to start talking now, how do I do this? In your collection of CDs, there's one that I really enjoyed listening to, which is Communicating Through Emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we communicate through our elders or our own emotions? Because we can get very emotional about certain topics. And then you talk about something which I think hit a nerve with me, which is called pre-grieving. And something my mother's going through right now. And when you talked about this, it was so helpful. So can you share this with our audience?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times the whole emotional aspect is such a surprise, because so often, you know, we talked about something 6 months ago and everybody was fine with it. And now all of a sudden, you know, you mention a topic, even some innocuous topic, and all of a sudden you find yourself smashing into a wall, and you know, it's like, oh my God, what happened? What just blew up? And oftentimes what happens is that it's the elder is, something has happened in their life. It can be something, and it's such a difficult time. It can be any one of a number of things. It can be that they read in the newspaper that someone died. And it doesn't even have to be someone they know, but obviously someone they know, it's even more so. But someone has died, or they hear about a friend who has moved into an assisted living, or has moved into a nursing home, or has moved out of their home and moved across country to be closer to their kids. And they hear these things. And oftentimes it's just so, and not just, we just don't even think about this having an impact, but whatever it is, it touches a nerve in our parent. And they start to do what I call pre-grieving. They're not grieving their own loss of a friend or of a husband or a family member. They're not grieving their own need to move into an assisted living, or their own need to move into a nursing home, or their own move across country. But they're pre-grieving it as if it had happened to them, because they feel like it's almost just a matter of time. And when someone anticipates and grieves a loss that hasn't happened yet and possibly never will, That's what I call pre-grieving. And it's much like a husband who experiences all the symptoms of his wife's pregnancy. You know, you're going through the process as if the event actually happened to them.
Right. No, it makes so much sense. And all right, let's suppose the parent has a life crisis, but the adult child has done very little to prepare, as is often the case. So I know situations could be incredibly diverse and varied, but what would be your key advice to such a person who is going through some kind of a crisis?
Well, and you're absolutely right, of course, that situations are incredibly diverse and varied, and every situation is different because every individual is different. That said, I think the key advice that's true for everyone, and it's harder in a crisis, but still has to be done in a crisis even more so, is to get very clear in understanding where your parent is right now, understanding where they are medically and where they are financially. Because if you are in any sort of a crisis, right now you need to know what's going on and what are the options. And a lot of times, unfortunately, the options have a lot to do with how much money have you got? Where do we stand financially? Do they have, you know, a power of attorney? Do they have money in a bank? And do they have prepaid funeral and, you know, all those kinds of things. So to understand where they are medically is to understand, okay, you know, don't assume that your parents have been telling you the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth where their health and finances are concerned, because remember when we talked earlier, Vicky D's and Silence are very private and proud about health and money. But knowing what's really going on medically and financially really is the only way to make good decisions.
Well, thank you. No, I want to now turn to something that I think I found incredibly helpful, too, because I'm in the process of discussing very difficult topics with my own parents. And you have an audio on the 19 pitfalls to avoid when discussing difficult topics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guilty of a number of these, and you don't have to talk about all of them because they're all wonderful. But number 14, I think, really hit a nerve with me because it was about presenting the worst-case scenario, that you really don't want to do that with your parents. And I've done that, thinking it was the right way to go about bringing up the topic of, preparing legal documents. Do you mind talking a little bit about this one and maybe one or two others?
Sure. And sometimes, like presenting the worst-case scenario and you mentioned the legal documents, maybe that is the right thing to do. Because you say, Mom, you know, if you don't say that what you want, if you have a health crisis and fill out a health care proxy, then, you know, you could be on a life support for the next 20 years and it would drain the family and all those kinds of things. But that's not the way you want to approach most of them. And
right.
And very possibly not that one either. The thing is that so often what they're going through emotionally, and we get, you know, things keep coming back to the emotional thing too, is there's just so much emotional landmines that they're dealing with right now, and so many emotional things and upsetting things, that what you don't want to do is to always present the worst case scenario and have them end up just sort of crawling into a hole and not coming back out and not wanting to talk about anything. You know, the worst case is like, oh my God, it will paralyze them sometimes, not always, but in many cases, it will just paralyze them with fear to the point where they just can't face it. And I think we can all relate to that. But we, as people who, you know, younger, we tend not to be quite as emotional because we've got more years to go and we're not having so many things happen. But for our parents, so many emotional things that are going on. And when you present the worst case scenario, oftentimes you can trip the switch and shut everything down.
Yes, and that has happened in my case. I'd like to now kind of switch gears a little bit. In your book, you talk about the importance of finding out what your loved one, your aging loved one, really wants. You know, my question is, how do you even begin that conversation? And then once you have the information, what if what they want seems unrealistic?
Well, it seems unrealistic or even impossible because we tend to think too literally. For example, if you say to your mother or your father, where do you want to live? And they say, I want to live at home. That pretty much ends it. I mean, that's then you go, well, so now what do I say? But rather than asking them, what do you want, to have them look at what, you know, have this, what do you want for the third half of your life? And that's one of the things that's in the book, is to talk about not just living at home, but what is it about living at home that you love so much? I love my garden. And I want to live where I can garden every day, where I have my independence, where I have my, I can cook for myself. All my friends are nearby. I can have my own furniture. I can come and go as I please, you know, all of those things. So it's, what is it about living at home? That, and what does living at home mean to them? Then you can help your parent to see what else could give them everything they want without any of the downsides. And this is one of those things where it's there's a very large chapter about it in the book because it's a little bit bigger than this than just briefly what I'm saying, but right. But basically it's what is the essence of what it is that you're looking for, because if I can give you what you want, the garden, the independence, the come and go, the cook for yourself, your friends, your neighborhood, and have you have a place where all, you know, assisted living kinds of things are also there, then would you be willing? And when they see that, all right, it gives me exactly the same thing. And I just had a client that it was we worked for two sessions, and I was coaching them on what to say to the mother, and it was exactly this, where the assisted living community that was about, it's right here in New York and it's about 6 blocks from where she lives, was exactly what she had without any of the downside. She's already accepted. She's already, they've put the down payment on, they're ready to go because it was the essence of what she wanted.
And that's the key.
It is.
Yep. Well, that's wonderful. And, you know, I love your tagline about elder care issues resolved by choice, not crisis. I think, you know, the question is it really possible for most families? You know, having read what you've, you know, your materials, I feel that it is. And do you want to share how is it possible to be able to do these things without a crisis and have it be our parents' choice?
Yes, and it is really possible. Things are going to happen, and they always will, and we know that. And there's going to be there are always circumstances in life where something happens, and it is in the situation of a crisis, it's a bad thing. Okay, so something happens. However, it doesn't have to be the crisis. If you've done some of the things that we've talked about already, for example, getting a very clear understanding of where your parent is right now, medically and financially. Also things like making sure that they have a health care proxy and a living will and a power of attorney, so that when something happens, let's say they break a hip. That would be if you don't know where they are financially or medically or whether they have a healthcare proxy and all the other things, that could be a crisis because all of a sudden you are trying to make decisions in a vacuum. But if you have done some planning and preparing in advance, and it doesn't have to be a lot of planning and preparing, but at least some, then it just doesn't have to be the crisis.
Right. And it's all about having that conversation as early as possible.
And it isn't just one conversation, by the way. Let me just say, it's not just one conversation. It's a little conversations. It's while you're doing the dishes and while you're setting the table. It's hundreds of little conversations that open the lines of communication.
Absolutely true. Now, you know, you talk about, you know, how to resolve these issues and how to really get at what your parent really wants. But let's also talk about the caregiver themselves, because they're probably overwhelmed not only with their own lives, but now caring for their parents. Tell us about setting boundaries. I think this is so important because I've been there myself and I haven't set enough boundaries, and then I suffered the consequences. What are some of the suggestions you offer?
Well, and we as women in general are generally pretty bad about setting boundaries to begin with. But then add to that that elder caregiving usually comes on gradually. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so difficult to have done all the boundary setting early on, because it comes on, you know, in the beginning so often. It does. It's just the little stuff. You know, okay, we'll pick up the meds at the drugstore and taking mom to the doctor or picking up groceries or coming once a week to clean the house or maybe coming twice a week now. And all of a sudden you look around and your life is falling apart and you realize, oh my goodness, I am now swamped. I am underwater. And we don't realize that it just crept up on us so quietly. And it gets bigger and bigger. And unlike child care that eventually is going to get better, with elder care generally it gets more so. It gets more and more time-consuming and difficult. In the beginning you're doing a little and then a little more and then a little more until you find yourself overwhelmed and really feeling in a lot of cases invaded. And obviously, the best case scenario is to talk early on and discuss what you as the caregiver can and cannot do and what you will and won't do. And that's obviously the best. That rarely happens because, as I said, you just aren't aware that you were doing it. And but even if you don't do it at the beginning, you can still do it, and you should do it. And to stop and say, as difficult as this may be because you don't want to hurt their feelings or whatever, is to say, hold on a second, I can't do all of this. We need to look at a different way of doing it. And not only saying this to your parent, but also saying this to your sibling is, hey, everybody, we need to take a look at this. I can't go to mom's house once a week and clean it. If somebody or all of you can chip in on somebody to come clean once a week, that would be great. I can't afford to pick up her groceries and not get reimbursed, and it embarrasses me to ask mom for money, and she always says she's going to give it, but she never does, and I'm not going to bug her about giving me money, but I can't afford to do this. Okay, we need to look at a different way of doing it, and to sit down and to say and to say as much as I love you, we have to come up with a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
And then setting those boundaries and keeping those boundaries, because a lot of times things just sort of, you know, everybody's gung-ho and then it just doesn't happen, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're back where you started. So you have to really...
Barbara. Yeah, no, you offer so much, I have to say, so many helpful suggestions. I think I'd love to talk about now, I'd love for you to share with the audience now, as a generational coach, you offer a number of products and services that benefit adult children and ultimately their elderly parents. So can you tell us about some of them?
Well, yes, I'd be delighted. You mentioned several times the Ultimate Caregiver Success System and the book. There's a book that comes with it, which is the guide that has all worksheets and all stuff like that, and it comes with CDs about what is the Vicki D generation, what is the Silent Generation, the pitfalls to avoid, and a whole bunch more. There are 11 CDs. So that is really a great thing. If you have a loved one where they're mentally fine, even if physically they're not, but mentally they're fine, this is an incredible system. Plus, it helps you to deal with sibling issues, a huge section on sibling issues. If you have a loved one that it has dementia issues, no matter how physically well they are, if they have any dementia issues, I also have a CD called Is It Simple Forgetfulness or the Real Thing? And I really so strongly recommend that because it is, it's just practical information. It's the kind of information I wish I'd had. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I don't get into any medical stuff. It's just really practical things about what dementia is and how to help your parent. And all of those are at my website, agewiseliving.com. And when you get to my site, you can I have a free newsletter that goes out once a week. I have a blog, free, I had a radio show, so I have 6 months worth of radio shows, so there's all kinds of information. So it's agewiseliving.com.
And I will testify that they are all incredible materials, I mean, so valuable, and I've signed up for your newsletter, and I look forward to reading the information when I get it, so thank you for that. Barbara, what would you like our audience to take away from our conversation today and from your work?
I think that probably the most important advice I give everybody is to start talking now. And talk while you're, as I said earlier, talk while you're doing the dishes. Talk while you're cleaning out the attic or whatever. And start really just talking about the easy stuff. Because all of that information, all of those conversations is going to make it so much easier to have a relationship that's going to enable you to really work well together later on.
Well, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today. You mentioned your website. You can learn more about Barbara Friesner and her company, AgeWise Living, on her website, www.agewiseliving.com. Her book, The Ultimate Caregiver Success System, is also available on her website. And Barbara, are there any other addresses or email or are you on social media as well? Do you want to
I am, and I have no idea what that is. I'm at AgeWise Living. That's my Twitter address, at AgeWise Living, and I hope you do Twitter with me. And is Elder Care Experts or AgeWise Living.
That's so, on Facebook?
I'm sorry?
I think we got cut off a little bit there. Was that Facebook?
Facebook. Right,
okay.
Is AgeWise Living and elder Care Expert.
Great.
So, yes, and Barbara at AgeWiseLiving.com. If you want to email me, it's Barbara at AgeWiseLiving.com, or you can just do it through my website, too.
Wonderful. I'd like to thank our audience very much for tuning in, and to please join us next time on Monday, September 27th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when our next guest, Gary Barg, the editor-in-chief of Today's Caregiver and founder of the Fearless Caregiver Conferences, will be with us sharing some very inspiring caregiving stories, including some of caregiving stories by famous celebrities. To learn more about eCare Diaries' free online calendar and management tools, visit www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to the Care Diary tool and to online personal social media. We are also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and my Twitter address is ecarediarysusan. Barbara, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you, Susan, for having me.
It's been wonderful. Thank you all, and we will get together next week. Thank you.